It's Just Not Cricket with Glenn Greensmith on ABC Radio.
So great to talk to you again. Really enjoying the time we're spending together at the weekend at the moment. Hope today finds you really well. We had such a fun show last week. Now, what we were doing last week was Backyard Birdwatch. And a couple of things came up. And I got lots of emails about them. One was when our bird expert, Eric McCrum, was translating raven calls.
If you listen very carefully to raven talk, and this is fairly generic with quite a lot, if you hear them going, ah, ah, just a single note, that's hi, how are you, yes. And in an answer to a question that may have been asked, and if you hear them doing it twice, ah, ah, that's their name, that's what their name is. If you hear them going three times, which is usually in the morning, you hear them three times, ah, 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 that means I'm hungry. If you hear them doing it four times, one, two, three, four, that means I've found food. And if you hear them five times, that means danger.
How good was that? A lot of people were emailing me saying, did he really just translate raven? Can I speak bird now? And we got lots of great messages for you on our text, from you on our text line, which is 0437 922 720. That's 0437 922 720, including this one from Rose, who sent us a video of her chatting with her magpie.
Morning. So what's happening in the world today? So it's the black poodle owner that doesn't pick up the dog poo. Good job finding that one out. That took a couple of days. Hey, we can have visitors soon, so I'll have people to talk to as well as you. Yes, of course we'll still have our chats too. I just don't like the currawong mode. Yeah, I know, you're right, it's okay. Okay, thanks for the chat. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
That was absolutely gorgeous. Both of those things together just got me thinking about how we can take that conversation forward this week.
I would converse in polar bear and python, and I would curse in fluent kangaroo.
I know you talk to your animals, of course you do. You actually have, like, normal conversations with them, or you give it the baby talk, because they're the goodest boys, and the goodest boys get the baby if they're talking. But my question to you today is, do they talk back?
Oh, man, don't hold me down. Carry me, but keep my feet on the ground. When the fire is gone.
Jane Goodall, the great chimp queen, does the hellos better than anybody.
My wonderful welcome comes to you from the forests and hills of Gombe National Park in Tanzania. The sound that you would hear if you came, some of you have been, but if you go to Gombe and climb the hills in the morning, the sound of a chimpanzee greeting the day, announcing, here I am, who's out there? Hello.
Lou Grossfeld is the primate curator at the Sydney Zoo. Hello.
Good afternoon.
It's really nice to have you on, Lou. What does the primate curator do?
Good question. I'm very fortunate that I get to manage quite a large and diverse team of not only non-human primates, but staff as well. So chimpanzees, orangutans and some hamadryas baboons are some of the primates we have in our collection.
You're a living cliche, Lou. I can only imagine that people just go bug-eyed when you tell them what you do for a living. You get to hang out with orangutans and chimps all day. Now, I wanted to start with you because you're looking after our closest cousins.
Yes.
How advanced is our ability to communicate with them?
I think that for me, having had an incredible close relationship with many chimps orangs and gorilla say, let's focus specifically on the grade eights for a long period of time. There are certainly examples throughout my career that I can feel. I was quite fortunate to work with a male gorilla called Kababu in a private zoo down on the south coast for a number of years. And in fact, I turned out to be his longest standing keeper. And I do remember one day sitting there in front of him and, you know, I was with some other keepers and the owner of the zoo, and we'd just built a new off-display facility for him. And I said to Sally and to Lisa, I said, look, guys, I'll sit here and watch him for a few minutes, and you guys go and have a cup of coffee and come back. And he was in his early 40s, so he certainly wasn't a spring chicken. And, you know, Glenn, I'll never forget that moment. He came down, he sat in front of me, he looked directly into my eyes, he touched his chest and he passed away. And it's something that I, you know, that I don't think about all the time, because for me he was an incredibly special animal. And I remember sharing this story with a very close colleague from Melbourne Zoo, Uli, who shared something very similar with a gorilla that she had worked with for a very long, long time as well.
Dory, this is not whale. You're speaking like upset stomach.
Maybe I should try humpback.
No, don't try humpback.
Whoa!
All right.
Whoa!
You actually sound sick.
Maybe louder.
My guest today is Dr. Jenny Allen from Griffith University. Or she's Dory. Could be either way. How are you, Jenny?
Good, good. How are you, Glenn?
Yeah, really well. What do you do with whales?
I essentially listen to their songs and try to understand how they learn them and what they might be using them for.
That is pretty glorious. Now, I have some clips here. Now, this one's from 2003. This is all from the Cetacean Ecology and Acoustic Laboratory at the University of Queensland. And I know you've worked a lot with here. And I think you're going to help us understand a little bit about this. So here's the first one. What are we hearing there?
So basically there, you're hearing one part of the song. So it's essentially the first verse. And that little clip that you heard, the whales would repeat over and over and over again. And then they'd move on to the next part of the song, which would be a different little pattern. And they'd repeat that pattern over and over. So what you heard there was just a two sounds, a kind of longer moan, and then a little kind of whop at the end.
And this is from 2006, and it's changed again.
Yeah, and so now they've essentially thrown out the song that they've just spent the last 3 years learning and embellishing, and they decided, you know what? We're sick of that. We're starting over. We're going to sing something completely new.
Give me something fresh. Kendrick. Kenny. How'd you sleep last night? Did you have a good sleep? Did you have a good sleep? Bad sleep. What are you going to have for dinner? Ken, what are you going to have for dinner? True.
Saka! Look! No, Kelly, over here, over here. Look! Look! Over here. Over here. Good girl.
What? What?
I have a pet rock named Hercules. I've had him for 3 years, since he was a little grain of sand. No, just kidding. I got him recently in this global pandemic because I thought it'd be nice to have a friend to stick through the hard times. And, you know, having a pet rock, it gives you responsibilities. You know, you got to feed and take care of him. And I know he can't hear me when I, you know, whisper little cutesy things to him. But it doesn't matter. It's not for his benefit, it's for mine.
Listening to It's Just Not Cricket. Now, this conversation we're having about talking to animals was sparked from our show last week. Our bird expert, Eric McCrum, was basically on the program translating ravens, and I got so many emails about it to the Facebook page. So that's how we got started on talking to animals, and Eric McCrum has called back in. Hello, Eric.
And greetings to you this afternoon.
Now, I'm not sure I'm reading this correctly. Bees. You want to talk about bees?
Yes. There's an experiment done some many, many years ago. I was an apiarist for right up until about 10 years ago. And they actually found out that bees can actually talk to their friends back in the hive. And the experiment was they put some honey on a up on the stick in the middle of a paddock where there was sort of nothing around there. And within a matter of, say, half an hour or so, several bees had found the honey, had a drink, and then zapped off. And then they took the honey thing away completely, and somewhere around about half an hour later, 20 or 30 or 40 bees all came, and all were circling around. And they actually found out that back in the hive, bees do a what they call a figure of eight dance, and they make a particular noise, and then they walk in this figure of eight, and they quiver their abdomen, and this is actually telling the bees exactly which direction and how high it is where the honey source was. And of course, this is something that you find in if bees actually find a honey source. It's only a matter of time before a whole mass of bees, they actually do this talking. It's incredible.
That is so cool. I quiver my abdomen too, but not for the same reasons. Eric, lovely to speak to you again. Thanks for calling back in.
My pleasure. All the best.
Say, I love you. I love you. Hey.
Have pets ever been more important than in lockdown? Laura Viseratis is an animal behaviourist and the host of the podcast Dognitive Therapy. How are you, Laura?
Hey, Glenn. It's been ages since we spoke.
Lovely to have you back on. Is this just us? Is this just us just putting our love onto the dogs, and the dogs are just looking at us going, feed me, idiot?
I think that's more cats, definitely. look, I think we do tend to give animals human emotions. We call it anthropomorphism a lot of the time. So when dogs sort of look like they're smiling, we think they're happy. But dogs have evolved over tens of thousands of years to be able to communicate with us and essentially very lovingly manipulate us into getting what they want when they want. So I do think that they are talking to us more than we give them credit for, and so it's great to talk about the sort of the way that we communicate with them and what we're trying to tell them and what they're trying to tell us.